Radio Africana,
your non-stop entertainment radio.
Fine afternoon to you. Delighted as always to be able to talk you through the latest in current affairs, entertainment, culture and tourism, and sports right here on Radio Africana. And we call the show Africa Weekly. It's a broadcast put together by Chris Okunua and yours truly, Emmanuel Etim. There's a lot to talk about on the show today, from Kemi Badenoch saying she no longer identifies as a Nigerian to a frosty relationship between the United States and South Africa. We also touched on the immaculate, if that's the right term to use to describe the deal for Victor Osimhen, who at the moment, I can say, has become the face of Turkish football. But first, the importance of giving thanks and praises.
But at the corner of a mouth, we've got a
If I termed a composition perfect, I wouldn't be far from the truth. Lucky Dubé with Let Jah Be Praised. Let's get the show on the road. Africa Weekly on Radio Africana. It's the very first edition for the new month, so I think it's just perfect if I say happy new month to you. Well, we start off as always, current affairs. This is an interesting tale. Something about the Conservative Party leader Kemi Badenoch, who has said she no longer identifies as Nigerian, and she hasn't had the opportunity to renew her passport since the early 2000s. Of course, she was born in the UK, grew up in both Nigeria and the United States. She returned to England when she was 16 because of, as it's termed, Nigeria's worsening political and economic climate, as well as, of course, to continue her education. She was speaking on former NPN television presenter Gals Bradnett's Rosebud podcast, where she said she was Nigerian through ancestry, but by identity, she's not really. As someone who has, of course, faced loads and loads of criticism, not just from Nigerians, but particularly from the vice president, who said that she often degenerates the West African country. It's not surprising, of course, Kemi, who once upon a time lived in Lagos, which is one of the most recognized states in the country, spoke at length about her upbringing on the podcast. She admits she understands and knows Nigeria very well. She's got a lot of family there, she said, and often interested in what happens there, but stay home is where my now family is, which of course she's referring to the United Kingdom. On not renewing a passport, she said, I don't identify with it anymore. Most of my life has been in the United Kingdom and I've just never felt the need to. She also went into art and just the emphasis that, of course, true ancestry and by birth, yeah, you can say she's Nigerian, but in terms of her identity, she hasn't really found the right way to associate herself with the West African country. She said that when she visited Nigeria when her father died, she had to get a visa, of course, which was, in her words, a big fandango. Also shared certain experiences she's had in the country in which she genuinely didn't find too pleasant, and spoke about how the political outlook in the country, in Nigeria, shaped her experiences, and saying it was one of the reasons why she doesn't like socialism as a child. Of course, she's head of the Conservative Party at the, and has not been a stranger to is the right word now, castigating and just down talking in Nigerian. The last time she made such a remark, that was, you know, on the surface, you could see as someone speaking ill of the West African country of Nigeria, the country's vice president, Kashim Shettima, had to respond. His government was proud of Hado, despite her effort at denigrating her nation of origin. Of course, someone who you'd classify as a spokesperson for Badenoch rebuffed the criticism. So, that's the very first undercards today. The Conservative Party leader, who obviously, if you hear Kemi, you know certainly where that name hails from, saying she no longer identifies as a Nigerian. We wish her all the best. Is that the right thing to say? Well, always often on Africa Weekly, there's going to be that conversation either between Nigeria and other West African countries, or South Africa and the United States. I think they've met the news than any other country right here on Africa Weekly. And today on the broadcast, it's almost the same as South African product exported to the United States will be hit by a 30%. That's what we're getting, a 30% tariff from the 7th of this month. That's August 2025. That's according to the United States President Donald Trump. Well, South Africa faces the highest rate in sub-Saharan Africa, reflecting Trump's strained relationship with the government of the incumbent president, Cyril Ramaphosa. Other African countries, including the one I just spoke about, Nigeria, the West African neighbors, Ghana, Lesotho, and Zimbabwe, another South African nation, have been hit with a 15% tariff, which will also come into effect just in a few days, to be specific, in about 5 days from now. That's when it will come into effect. So the decision is pretty much a huge blow to South Africa, as the United States is its second biggest trading partner. Just looking across the continent, including North Africa, exports from Algeria and Libya will now also incur a 30% tariff at the US border. That's what we can confirm. Tunisian goods are facing a 25% rate. Goods from Kenya and Ethiopia, on the other hand, will be charged at the lower 10% rate. This tariffs and taxes charges on goods bought from other countries, typically they're just a percentage of a product value. The United States President Donald Trump, the reason why he's always proud to just argue in favor of any decision he takes, and he's argued that the introduction of this tariffs will protect American businesses from foreign competition. And not only that, he also emphasized that it will boost domestic manufacturing and give the opportunity for Americans to have more jobs. Well, South Africa's automobile, farming and textile sectors had enjoyed duty-free access to the United States. That was under the African Growth and Opportunity Act that was enacted, that's the right word, in 2000. The essence for that was to help countries on the continent just create jobs and also get the opportunity to grow the economies. But Donald Trump is here now and is saying, well, this is going to take effect straight on, and his announcement just effectively spells the end of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, even though it is officially up for a review in September. So Donald Trump saying, South Africa, you've got to pay 30% tariff if you want to continue trading. For Nigeria, Ghana, and certain other countries I mentioned, well, they are stick at 15%, while you've got goods from Kenya and Ethiopia charged at the lower rate of 10%. So I'm not certain, you know, what this relationship not too pleasant is between Cyril Ramaphosa, the South African president, and Donald Trump. And as expected, they had to respond to the decision, and responding or reacting, as the case is, to the news of the 30% tariff, the South African president Ramaphosa said his administration would, and I quote, continue negotiating with the United States, and also said they had submitted a framework to ensure that this is sorted to the United States. In the meantime, the government is also finalizing the package to support companies that are vulnerable to this reciprocal tariff. So that's the update from the South Africans, saying they're trying to negotiate. So Trump is saying, no, you got to pay 30%. They're saying, well, let's see if we can just bring it down to, you know, the 10, maybe even 15, just like the Nigerians have been taxed. The US-South African relations have hit rock bottom since Donald Trump took office in January. We know the United States president had stopped all aid to South Africa. It's accused it of discriminating against its white minority. And, the South Africans will deny it, and they vehemently have denied that they discriminate against the white minority. They say everyone in South Africa are happy. And at a point, just a month back, to be specific, in May, the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, held talks with Donald Trump in a bid to mend the relations, but it wasn't successful. So hopefully they sort it out. So earlier this week, Donald Trump indicated that he would maybe send someone else to the G20 leaders summit that will take place later this year in Johannesburg. So aside from tasking them heavily, he also just doesn't want to associate himself fully to South Africa. So when you have the G20 summit where he's expected to lead, he probably might send the vice president to someone else to go represent the United States. Well, whatever the case is, we'll keep you abreast right here on Africa Weekly on Radio Africana. Away from South Africa in the United States conversation, this has to do with consumption of liquor, alcohol in Kenya. It's pretty much an interesting report coming through from Nairobi. This was made official, setting storm brewing in Kenya over the latest proposals to control the sale and consumption of alcohol, including raising the minimum drinking age from 18 to 21. And as expected, there'll be people who will be against it. At 18, you expect it to be legal in most countries. But in Kenya, there's a proposal to say if you're not 21 and you're caught with any brand that isn't soft, you could face a sentence. The sweeping proposed rules unveiled on Wednesday include a ban on purchasing alcohol in supermarkets, restaurants, and on public transport, the online sale and home delivery of alcoholic drinks, as well as celebrity endorsements, will also be outlawed. So loads of celebrities and endorsements plans to market some of this would hit rock bottom. The authorities have defended the planned measures as necessary to address substance abuse, especially among the youth. But many Kenyans, including those in the alcohol industry, have come out to criticize the proposal. They say it's misguided and potentially destructive to the economy of the country. Well, if they are approved, then alcohol will only be available in pubs and bars, as well as shops specifically licensed for its sale. The plans were unveiled by the National Authority for the Campaign Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse. They call them NACADA out there in Kenya, in what was seen as one of the most aggressive anti-alcohol policies the country has seen in a while. They also had to come out because when you make certain decisions, you have to back it up with data to genuinely see that those who are abusing substances. The agency estimated in 2022 that one in every 20 Kenyans aged between 15 and 65 were addicted to alcohol. But again, it's their data, which of course is verifiable. But they're saying it's time we just turn the tide and just ensure that Kenya is safe. Politically, of course, there's still in a bit of, I wouldn't say turmoil, but it's not all glory there. But at the moment, they want to lay consent also on this. Prominent lawyer Donald Kipori had to come on X, formerly known as Twitter, to say the move to ban the sale of alcohol in supermarkets, restaurants, public beaches, recreational facilities, and petrol stations will kill the hospitality sector in Kenya. And we know Kenya is massive when it comes to tourism. It's a destination driven not only by wildlife but also by good food, alcohol, wine, beer, spirits, and a bit of some romps, he added. So let's see how far this will go, because we know Kenya has made attempts to control alcohol abuse in the past, including through legislative attempts. Of course, the problem with abuse continue to persist. I remember in 2023, when the then Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua proposed It's somewhat of a radical step to reduce alcohol abuse in the country's central region, which is still seen as worst hit by the menace, saying the country's government should only allow one pub per town. So if you if you want to take a drink, you could walk the distance of, I'm not exaggerating, maybe from Manchester to Liverpool, you could find maybe just two or three pubs, maybe. But that's the news coming through from Kenya. So at the moment, if you have it on your list to travel to Kenya, you might not find, I wouldn't say entertainment, but I don't find as much liquor as it naturally exists. So at the moment, they're trying to raise the minimum drinking age from 18 to 21. I probably will wrap up on this. At least 22 people were killed and 197 others injured in violence which erupted during protests against a fuel price hike somewhere in Angola this week. And the pictures are very, very unpleasant. Looting and lots of vandalism and clashes with the police started in the capital, Luanda, and then spread to six other provinces. Well, you'd expect the security agencies to respond, and they did respond. Sporadic gunfire heard across the city. Tuesday, people looted shops and also clashed with the police. The president, Joao Lourenço, had to quickly just summon his cabinet, which met and also received an update, and a statement from the president confirmed that there had been 22 deaths, 197 people injured, and 1,214 arrests made. 66 shops and 25 vehicles also vandalized, and some supermarkets and warehouses looted. It was pictures I'm seeing, pictures you'd find during a very, very serious protest. The streets of Luanda tense and largely empty. Hopefully they resolve it and see how things can be better for the citizens, because if living conditions are pleasant, no one will wake up and say they want to go protest. That's just a fact of life. And in a joint statement made, the opposition, UNITA and Bloco Democratico Party, said Angola was, and I quote, in a severe economic and social crisis that was as a result of government policies disconnected from the country's reality. Well, what can I say? Hopefully the next time we return and we have something to discuss as regards Angola, it would be that the people have fuel and they no longer are protesting as it stands. We'll take a break now. When we return on Africa Weekly, it'd be the tourism and culture segment where we would share a perfect travel destination and amplify the walk-ins of a major tribe. Welcome back. You're still listening to Africa Weekly on Radio Africana. We're broadcasting live from Manchester. I'm Emmanuel Atim. Let's get into the tourism and culture segments of the show. Today we touch down Tanzania. It's a country which stands out as one of Africa's most captivating tourist destinations due to its unmatched blend of natural wonders, wildlife, and cultural richness. It's home to Mount Kilimanjaro, the highest peak in Africa, and of course the Serengeti National Park, renowned for the great migration of over 2 million wild beasts and zebras. I mean, it's just beautiful. The names are beautiful to mention. You know, you speak of Mount Kilimanjaro, such a representation, the Serengeti National Park. But beyond the mainland's wilderness, Tanzania also charms with its coastal beauty, especially the Spice Island of Zanzibar. Most of our Nollywood and Afrowood, all of those organizations that put together exciting movies across the continent often have actors just flying to Zanzibar for either honeymoon or the sort, so, you know. But it's known for its turquoise waters, white sandy beaches, and historic stone town. It's a cultural fusion of Arab, African, and European influences. Tourists like yourself listening to me, if you do have an opportunity, can enjoy everything from snorkeling in coral reefs and getting the chance to sail on traditional dhows to exploring centuries-old architecture and lively local market. Tanzania offers not just a journey through landscapes, but also through heritage and heart. In Tanzania, the most popular and widely known tribe are the Sukumas. So we've decided to give a bit of insight in Africa Weekly today about the Sukuma people. Approximately in terms of the population, 8 to 10 million who are located mainly in the northwestern part of the country, just around Mwanza, Shinyanga, Simiyu, Geita, and the Tabora regions. In terms of ethnicity, they are Bantu. That's correct. And of course, language. It's the Kisukuma. That's the language they speak. But also, we know those out there enjoy Swahili, which is the national language, especially in towns and cities. But the Kisukuma is a Tonal and part of the Bantu language family. But elders also, which is a good thing, and that's why they are quite fully represented. Elders out there often prefer to speak Kisukuma, while the yippies, the youths, speak mostly Swahili. The women, I love to talk about them. In terms of the role in the society, they traditionally manage the households. They are crucial in terms of farming, cooking, and also child rearing. Polygamy is practiced in some rural areas. So for certain Nigerians who might be listening, or African men who might not have the opportunity to do that where they are, if you're looking for a platform, and this is not me advertising polygamy, I'm just saying, if you want to dwell in such, you could take the next flight to Tanzania and abide with the profile on the broadcast today, just making reference, of course, to the Sukumas who accept, you know, polygamy. It's a part of it. It's practiced in some rural areas, I've got to say. But crucially, though, respect for elders and husbands is deeply, deeply ingrained. In terms of the fashion for the women, headscarves and wraps are used, especially in rural areas. Bright kente and kanga fabrics are also commonly worn. An increase in access to education and employment in urban areas has seen the women have some level of modern influence as we speak. In terms of the food out there in Tanzania, and notably from that region, the people of the Sukumas, they have quite the delicacies. Ugali, it's maize flour porridge. It's a major dish out there. They also have maziwa ya mgando, which is fermented milk. Also nyama choma, which is grilled meat. Local fish also from Lake Victoria. They enjoy vegetables, Sukuma Wiki, it's collard greens. They also love beans, pumpkin leaves, and local fruits for delight. Not living out traditional brews, local beer from Mele or Sohom. So as they eat, they drink, and they also dance, which, you know, just takes out a profile into a sort of dance and music that is performed, but mostly done through drums, ngoma, that's what they call drums out there in Tanzania, flute and tom pianos. Song often tells stories or just simply praise the ancestors. In terms of the dances, it's very energetic. Traditional dances during harvest, weddings, or rite of passage. There's a popular traditional Sukuma dance. It's called the Bogo Bogo Bogo. And I'm not exaggerating. It's the Bogo Bogo Bogo. That's what it's called. It's quite popular out there. That some Sukuma's artists have had the opportunity to blend local sounds with bongo flavor, which is a Tanzania pop. In terms of religion, every country, every tribe has something they believe or someone they worship. Traditional beliefs pretty top there. Ancestor worship, spirit mediums, and rituals are still practiced, especially in rural areas. Strong beliefs in healing through traditional medicine and diviners. But again, where would you not find Christianity and Islam? Both Catholic and Protestant are the modern religions. Islam, especially in urban coastal areas, you'd find Islam quite predominant there. And there are those who, you know, many people who just mix traditional beliefs with former religion. It's expected. You pray today, you buffer, as they say, tomorrow. In terms of culture and lifestyle, they are primarily farmers and cattle herders. They grow crops like maize, cotton, cassava, and mille. In terms of the social structure, the elders do hold high status. Extended families often live together, just somewhat of a neat community. But as I referenced, the elders and husbands getting respect, it's just part of their value system out there. Respect, humility, and generosity. Storytelling and oral history are also central to cultural transmission. So if you're looking for a travel destination on the continent in Africa, today on Africa Weekly, we're saying make it Tanzania. You'd have not just the breath of fresh air, the beauty of wildlife, but also you could get the opportunity just to engage and see how the Sukumas, Sukuma tribe live. Let's pause for a bit on the show. K1 the Ultimate, they call him Kwamwan. He's got a message for us. When we return, it'll be time to talk entertainment on Africa Weekly.
Awatunde Bajende Dr. Mabola Homa Fini Fono Mba Obato Jakwe Mabe Owe Luwa Aitunu Bemo Wasi Gumbe Lowo Lowo Mba Oba Ikutola Notole Ni Ainde Wasi Utola Jokobo Alabinu amasasi Tori kwe jete mi amokola Womi ashe olon bani Mafori mafi yifele dumare Mafoku folo mba Olon mayo Olon mayo mo woju we o Papa wa sheta wa baba Oro wa kuda yo Tete ba wa she Koju ma she ti mi o Oumba mi she Eda long sare She baby, final decision below. Ma se je ko ta bere pe bo l'Olorun te mi wa la ye le du ma re mi ma so mi lojo gogo wa ji je mi mu la loni o ki pada bo mi le du ma re ma je ka wo.
You're still listening to Africa Weekly on Radio Africana, the UK number one Afro station. We're broadcasting live from Manchester. It's the radio station everyone agrees with. Absolutely no doubt. It's time for us to talk entertainment. It's coming off the desk of Dakboy Ibanji. Well, you could call him the Banj. What a character he is musically. An icon, you could say, when it comes to African music. One of those who known for shaping the sound of a generation, and he's rolled back the years with a new single Tobari, which features DJ Obi and DJ Maforiza. So the Banj is back with some amazing tunes. The record opens with an exclusive lifestyle flex, set in a smooth tone of luxury and late night groove. That's the man they also call as the Coco Master. His new single sees him draw inspiration from his classic Why Me, which is one of Afrobeat's greatest hits, I do say so, and which announced him as the Coco Master, set to redefine Nigerian music. In 2024, he released The Entertainer, the sequel, where he just somehow reimagined his classic single, Tongolo. Also partnering with stars like Fino. You had Akon on that album. Also, the Makosa crooner himself, Awilo Longomba. His latest single, Tobari, is intended to be the soundtrack for the summer as the band continues to add new pages to an illustrious career, you'd say. Oh, just one more. Not too pleasant. Details coming true. The Nigerian movie industry thrown into mourning following the death of popular actress Omotola Odunsi. She's passed in after a brief illness, it says. Details about the cause of her death at the moment, though, haven't been made public. But a colleague, Akinola Shagbowe Akanu, confirmed her death in a heartfelt Instagram post. He shared the last conversation and put photos, of course, of the actress, revealing that she had earlier said she wasn't feeling better. Also, veteran actor Dunladi Adekola, who pretty much mentored Odunsi, also confirmed it and just had to write RIP. And the actress worked as a credit officer at the state-owned bank before she resigned in 2019 to pursue acting full-time. She has quite the portfolio, the catalogue, as the case is, featured prominently in several Yoruba films such as Ajanaku, Darkness, Ogolua, Dagogo, Dr. Aduni, Folagbade, President Kuda, lots and lots and lots. And also not living out the Netflix Lisa B, The Uprising. So pretty much very heartbreaking reports just coming through of the passing of popular Nollywood actress Motola Odunsi, who's died after a brief illness. Let's take another break. When we return, it would be time to talk sport, as I call it, the toy department of life. One of my favorite segments. All the segments on the show, I've got to say, I enjoy it. But you know, sport and Emmanuel, like Siamis, there's so much to share. Of course, the focal point would be Victor Osimhen just headlining all the conversation. That deal is sealed. We'll talk about it. We'll also let you in on what's going down across certain football clubs here in the United Kingdom. Teams are still signing players and teams are refusing to sign players. All of this when we return. We know in sports, there are loads and loads of calculations and mathematics.
All stands, greet.
Good morning, you're welcome to Jagba Jantis High School. My name is Sam Sultan, your new mathematics teacher. By the way, do you understand Pidgin English?
Yes, sir!
Okay, now what are we going to use this for? Okay, carry your paper. Yeah. Fem for my class.
People of this world, them plenty.
Shut the ball.
Sins of this people, many. So many. Many times plenty
multiplier.
Many times plenty multiplier. I'm the answer you get now waiting, they make poor money cry. The answer you get now waiting, they make rich man they mess and leaders they lie. The answer you get now waiting, they make young boys and girls join party gang. Answer you get now waiting, they make innocent man rot inside the jail.
Kill it, kill it.
And then agree to grant a bail.
Kill it, kill it.
Oh, oh. Everybody, oh yeah, oh,
join Jamba Jantis with the soft mathematics.
With the Dabaru, our continent. So, oh,
oh, both say about mass.
Go use tapes
of mathematics. So follow Jagba Jantis.
So ya carry by him. Be for brotherhood.
Love your neighbor as yourself, Otto.
Oh, for objectivity.
Be objective, generally.
Be for democracy. Democracy.
No matter how bad it is, in our military.
Now M for modification.
Of our behavior, let's not do the same here.
A, accountability.
If you've been a chump, hey, they can be easy.
S for solidarity.
For my show.
We enter new millennium.
Shut it ball.
Nigerians like 120 million. More ball gone.
Shut it ball.
One population of 60 billion.
60 billion.
One by 120 million altogether, oh yeah.
Altogether.
The answer you get now waiting, they make people ninja. Come on for ninja. Answer you get now waiting, they make people want trouble. By hook or by crook. The answer you get now waiting, they make people they sleep for embassy
for visa.
Answer you get now waiting, they make people they sell the property for ticket. Get it. So,
for you both say about us,
we go use takes
of mathematics. So follow Jagba Jantis.
So ya carry by ero, be for brotherhood.
Love your neighbor as yourself, also.
Oh, for objectivity.
Be objective, gentlemanly.
Be for democracy.
No matter how bad it is, let a military.
M for modification. Accountability.
If you've been a chump money, I beg you take it easy.
S for solidarity.
United we stand and divided. Oh, my show.
You just the HSCT.
Shut the ball.
Shatibon.
And there's the Vichy City.
Shatibon.
Micro level for Edge City.
Edge City.
And Richmond Corner be Vichy City.
Vichy City.
You try at AJ and Vichy City. All together, oh yeah.
All together.
The answer you get now waiting, they make Richmond oppress. And then suppress. The answer you get now waiting, they make poor man depress. But then aggress. The answer you get now waiting, they make poor man they try to keep up with the Joneses. The answer you get now waiting, they make poor man begin. They try to prove a limit. Get it, get it. Now get money then they finish. Get it. So,
going boxing in upon us,
we go use takes
of mathematics. So, follow your guidance.
So, your carnival
situation in this nation, disposition, our condition, unexplainable pain. In our hearts, not to mention brothers killing brothers for pain, salvation. Resolutions are made, but always made with lack of vision. Imperfection is the order as we keep seeking solutions. Only God can solve this mathematical equation.
Thanks for your contribution. Now, any more questions?
Legendary actor Saul Sultan, may his soul continue to rest in peace. What a tune that is. Mathematics, loads of calculations at the moment. Players going, players coming. And welcome back. It's the final stretch on Africa Weekly today. So I often call it the toy department of life. Emmanuel Atim holding the fort. Let's talk sports. Starting off with the biggest, in my estimation, the biggest conversation has to do with transfer. It's Victor Osimhen, the Nigerian and former African Player of the Year. Well, his love has been amplified in Turkey. Galatasaray have completed the signing of the Nigerian. It's a long-term deal from Napoli. The Super League champions have made Victor Osimhen the most expensive incoming transfer in Turkish soccer history. They have paid Napoli €75 million. That's approximately $85.74 million to sign him on a permanent deal. The previous record in Turkey was set by Fenerbahce when they signed Yusuf El Nesri from Sevilla on a 5-year contract for €20 million in July last year. Just picture the difference. El Nesri signed for Fenerbahce €20 million. Victor Osimhen, €75 million. That's an incredible sum. And when it comes to conversation about his status with Nigeria, he's pretty much a big deal. Osimhen, he's scored 26 goals in 40 matches for Nigeria. He's on course to break the record for the most goals scored and the national team. It's a record currently held by the legendary and late Rashidi Yekini, and Victor is still pretty young, and give him about a year or two, that record might be as good as gone. So congratulations to him. It's a massive deal come true, and undoubtedly the face of Turkish football, and let's see how well he would perform. Probably surpass what he did last season. This has to do with Mamelodi Sundowns. The striker Peter Shalulile is actively closing in on what they would reference as a blockbuster move. If that happens, he could be on his way to Tunisian giant Esperance Tive, as the club prepares to sanction one of the most high-profile exits from the PSL. That's what they call the South African League, the Premier Soccer League, this transfer. Well, sources in South Africa confirm that Esperance are finalising terms with Mamelodi Sundowns to secure the signature of the 31-year-old Namibian international who left the Brazilians, as they called. That's what they refer to Mamelodi Sundowns. Not surprising if you see their outfit. It's just typical what you find the Brazilian national team wear. So potential departure could just represent a major shake-up for Mamelodi Sundowns as they look to recalibrate their squad following a dominant domestic campaign. He's a sensation, Shalulile, Well, the man who took over the gong from Victor Osimhen, the current African best player, is also Nigerian, Ademola Lookman. He's rejected a €45 million bid from Inter Milan. Well, Atalanta, that is not the one who's rejected it. So they're saying they want more, potentially. The offer comprised of €42 million up front and €3 million in performance-related bonuses, which somehow just fell short of Atalanta's €50 million valuation for the player. Inter have come out to say, we want Lookman. He's 27. He's such a performer who has scored 20 goals in all competition, including 15 in the Italian Serie A. He's a key player. We like him, but this is our budget. And Atalanta are saying, now if you don't have €50 million, you can't get the Nigerian. Despite the improved offer, though, Atlanta remain unmoved. They say we want €50 million or nothing. In a move that has intensified speculation over his future, Lookman, by the way, has removed all mentions of Atalanta from his Instagram bio. It just feels like he's trying to force his move away or anywhere but Atalanta at the moment. I think he's done practically everything and helped them to success two seasons back. Let's see where he would be heading. Maybe Inter Milan, maybe outside of Italy, you never know. Here in England, the Premier League champions, Liverpool, continue to hunt. Maybe not for Alexander Isak. We do have a large contingent of Liverpool fans across the African continent, but they claim they are willing to walk away from a move for striker Alexander Isak. Well, after Newcastle United rejected the opening offer, the Magpies, who value the Sweden international at about £150 million, turned down a bid of £110 million from the Premier League champions. And according to the BBC, I believe Liverpool don't think that a deal for Isak is achievable this summer as it stands. Well, I'm getting signals that it's time for me to wrap things up. Well, I'll wrap up with this story, which could be quite detailed. It's about Achraf Hakimi. The PSG defender could face up to 15 years in prison if convicted over an allegation of rape. Prosecutors in France have formally requested that a PSG and Morocco international be sent to trial before a criminal court. We'll keep you updated on this. It's quite broad. The case stems from an alleged incident on the night of February 25, 2023 at Hakimi's home in Boulogne-Billancourt. It's a suburb out there in Paris. A 24-year-old woman claims she was raped after being invited to the player's residence. And this is a player who my money's on to be African Player of the Year based on his performance for PSG and less competition in that stride. At the moment, we don't know his future, but it's all allegations. Nothing is proven. Well, that's the size of the show. Africa Weekly on Radio Africana. On behalf of your regular host, Chris Okunua, I'm Emmanuel Etim, saying have a fantastic evening and a great August. Bye for now.
Motherland calls. Hit the call. Radio Africana is the call.